Oh, rainforest.
Some listeners might not be old enough to remember the Green Giant commercial.
I think that's how you tell the difference between Santa Claus and the Green Giant, is that Santa Claus goes, ho, 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 and the Green Giant goes, ho, ho, ho.
You do that so well.
I've had practice.
I think you make a good Green Giant.
I've been called the Green Giant. In fact, didn't you and I once sit down and I recited to you all of the nicknames that I've had? I've had 27 different nicknames.
That's right.
And you were kind of like, your list was much shorter, and you were kind of feeling left out.
I was called the Jolly Green Giant once, too. Because I was freaky tall in grade school, because girls grow quickly. It was the 70s, and I actually used to wear, I was skinny and tall, and I wore a green jumpsuit. So it made me look even taller. And a really, really short boy called me the Jolly Green Giant.
So, and then I remember you once told me about that, and then the boys would provoke you into chasing them.
Yeah, you know, grade school.
You're
little
such
kids.
You were such a shameless flirt.
Well, now we need to say why you're ho-ho-hoing.
Well, yeah, the ho rainforest. We're on our way to the ho rainforest.
And that's here on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington, and it's spelled H-O-H.
We're on Highway 101, which is like the one that goes down the coast. But we're on the coast that goes east to west. on that little edge of Washington State, on the very northern edge. In fact, if you look off to the right, you can probably see islandy things belonging to Canada.
Right, right. We just passed Squim. Just went through Squim, which is, you know, we have lots of native names around here, and Squim you would not think is pronounced Squim.
So you mentioned your childhood, and when I got chased when I was a kid, even though I was really big, usually I was the most giant kid in class by far. However, there was this short, when I was young, I moved around a lot for a lot of weird reasons, but I spent about 4 months living in South Seattle, and I was one of two white kids in my class, and I remember every recess and every lunch and every break we got, there was this one black girl who was much bigger than me, way bigger than me,
wow.
And every recess started with the same magic words, I'm going to kick your honky ass.
Oh.
I think she said it like this, I'm going to kick your honky ass! And then I would run. And it was very aerobic because I did not want her to kick my honky ass. And I managed to save my honky ass. And always managed to, I don't know how I managed to outrun her because I was never very fast, but I did. And it was, I just remember it being very important.
Right.
That was a weird thing. I was in the fifth grade, and it's like there were kids with knives, and I remember when fights would break out, I remember them picking up those things that were like the desk and chair built in one, and they would throw those at each other.
Joyful times.
They were really serious about pain. they weren't holding back a little, you know? So I just remember lay low, although, you know, being a giant kid, it was kind of hard to lay low. And, you know, a lot of angst was directed towards white people.
Yeah, good times. Well, let's move back to talking about lovely rainforests.
Okay, because I had about another hour to go on that, but I'll let it go. Yes, we're on our way to see the rainforest.
There's a cop.
Ooh, where? Oh, there he is.
He had the radar.
They're so damn sneaky.
He had the radar gun on us.
I think I'm keeping it at a good pace, though. I love the cruise control. You say, dear cruise control, make it so I don't get a ticket. And the cruise control just, like, obeys. And then you just kind of don't think about it. You listen to a lovely book on CD. That's the magic. And then you don't get tickets.
So we are on our way to visit somebody's homestead, on our way to the Ho Rainforest, and we just stayed one night so far in a cool house in Port Townsend.
Oh, right. Look, there's another cop. Man, they're just everywhere.
It's Saturday morning. It's a gorgeous, sunny Saturday morning. What are they doing?
They're on patrol.
Ah.
Yeah, man, I saw one guy pulled over. But yes, we did the Airbnb thing.
Right. So Airbnb.com. But you have a link where you get a little bit of a kickback if people go through your link. An affiliate link, it's called, right?
Right. So it seems like it was about a year ago I first heard about Airbnb, and I thought, this is so cool. So I signed up for their affiliate program and set it up, and then I think nobody ever went and clicked on it. And so I got zero. It's like, oh, I went through all that trouble and nothing. But now we've done our first Airbnb thing, and it was way cheaper than anything else in the area.
Oh, man, yeah, fraction.
And it turned out to be that we got the entire house to ourselves, and it was like, and it's in a community. It's in an intentional community in the Port Townsend area. All these houses are super funky cool.
Yeah.
And there's like a big central garden, a big central play space for the kids, and they got their community house, and the house we're in, I think that's ferro cement that they've made things out of.
Yeah, it's got some gorgeous arched entryways and a spiral staircase with lots of cool curves, and they've got lots of neat features going on all throughout the house. It's really fun.
And it was crazy clean when we got there, but it's like it's got a castle-y thing on it, and
right.
Even the handrails seem to be made out of ferro cement.
Yeah, the turret part is actually the curved staircase for the three stories, so it looks really cool. The reason we think it's freaky clean is because this household has six children.
Yeah, and you can't tell. It was all clean.
Oh,
I was expecting like. There's any food rubbed all over the walls in the kitchen or something.
Right.
But no, it was totally tidy.
Right, right. Well, the porch looked a little junky at first, you know, but it's because all of the children's shoes and soccer shoes and skates and all of their stuff and balls and stuff is all on the porch. And you think, oh, this looks like it could be rather cluttery, but then you get inside and it's just beautiful. It's a lovely, lovely place.
None of those shoes fit me.
Yeah, they might have fit your big toe.
And we saw a rhubarb that was enormous.
Oh,
that was like,
gosh.
It may be the largest rhubarb I've ever seen. It was a good 5 feet tall. What's this guy doing?
Well, it's May in Port Townsend, and everything is just incredibly lush and green and growing, including the rhubarb, and it's just a beautiful trip.
Or we should tell people what Airbnb is. So it's airbnb.com, right?
Yes, but they want to go through your affiliate link if they do it.
Susie Bean, make a link to my link.
Right. So if somebody has an extra bedroom or whatever, they can put that up as a bed and breakfast type link through Airbnb. And actually, and the goal of it is that you kind of get to know people and you stay in someone's home and they help tell you all the sights to see and things like that, and then you get really fantastic cultural exchange. And our host just happened to be gone for the weekend, and they're really bummed because they wanted to talk to us about the stuff that Paul does, and we were bummed because we wanted to talk to them about the community and learn more about this community they live in and whether it is ferro cement and things like that around their home. So we missed out on that just timing-wise, but the idea of this Airbnb is really fantastic. And the website itself, you told me this, Paul, is that they provide insurance and there's some safeguards and stuff built in there if you're inviting people into your home that you don't know.
I heard once that somebody went to somebody's house and they kind of trashed the house, and Airbnb came in and paid for everything to be fixed better than before. And so that way the party whose house got trashed was like, I love Airbnb.
Well, I mean, these people are kind of new to it, And they checked me out, you know, basically through a bunch of my social media sites and things like that to make sure we were decent people before they were going to let us stay there.
And they decided you were decent because you had a Facebook friend of Jenny Pell who used to live there. She's a
right.
Jenny Pell is a well-known permaculture designer in the Puget Sound area.
Right, right. And I met Jenny Pell many times, and actually my daughter almost ended up living with Jenny Pell at one point. So, and Jenny Pell worked with us out at a co-housing community in our area with a situation we did at a presentation you did there, and they needed a consultant. So we've had a lot of great experiences with Jenny Pell, and so that was a nice small world connection and made the Airbnb thing happen, I think.
Right. So I remember when I first looked at the Airbnb thing, I was thinking, like, there's a lot of people that had these funky tree houses, and they were basically saying stuff like, they were, like, come stay at my tree house. Like, if you're in town, rather than staying in a hotel, come stay in my tree house. But it was, like, a really nice tree house.
Yeah.
And I was thinking that was cool. Other people were like, hey, I got a boat, and it's, you know, down at the dock. You can stay in my boat while you're in town.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. And I was thinking, this so rocks.
Yeah.
This is far cooler than, like, staying in a hotel.
Right. Well, and I think it's a level up from couchsurfing.org. You know, couchsurfing.org is free. You know, you don't charge anything. And you still get a culture of exchange. I know someone who has had a lot of Germans come stay on his couch in the Seattle area, and he loves it because it gives them an opportunity to speak German and have that cultural exchange. But the couchsurfing.org is, there's no charge. And so the Airbnb, there typically is a charge, but it's usually much more affordable and a little bit more casual. So from what I can tell. But there's a wide range of options.
So we're going to, hopefully, when we get back from the Ho Rainforest, we'll be able to meet some people at the community and learn more about the community, and we'll take some more pictures of that amazing rhubarb and things like that. So in the meantime, I think one of the things I want to talk about is on the way to the Ho, we're not there yet, but of course we are in an area that gets a pretty decent amount of rainfall. And one of the things that we've been noticing is right now the Scotch broom is in bloom. And I think that Scotch broom is a great plant to talk about from a permaculture perspective, in that it is a nitrogen fixer, and at the same time it's non-native. And so it grows on the roadsides because it'll try to get started almost anywhere. So as we're going by, we're seeing like 50, 60 of them. They're all over the place. I mean, they've got these big yellow flags out right now. And then they grow little pea pods, and then they'll throw these peas out everywhere. So
they don't just throw them. The pea pods explode, and the seeds can travel up to 30 feet from the explosion. I learned that yesterday from Forrest Schomer.
Right. So the last podcast that you heard was with Forrest Schomer, and we spent a lot of time visiting with Forrest. And I got a little bit of video of him talking about Scotch broom, which is kind of funny because he said he had just spent the morning pulling Scotch broom from one of his many projects. He loves to set up spaces where he's going to make them kind of like a native museum. It's going to be something that is like, here is what this piece of land may have looked like 500 years ago. And so he'll do all the work in pulling out all of the non-native species, but which is a huge amount of work, just enormous. You can only do it on small patches. And we saw his beautiful Camas prairies. And he's got several other spots where he does this kind of thing. But we also talked about how it's like, oh, yeah, you know, trying to beat all the Scotch broom in the county, that's not a reasonable thing to try and do. It's here forever. You gotta admit that. And then it's like, you could try and set up places where there's less of it, is all. Look at all that Scotch broom. That's a lot of yellow right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. he was pulling up some from his yard that was seed that had gotten into the soil 22 years ago. So he said the seed can last up to 80 years. So it's pervasive, shall we say.
He said that one person said that the seed can last up to 90 years.
Oh.
And then it's like, you know, but it's like, it might last even longer than that, only it's like, how do you, people typically don't live long enough to be able to find out whether or not it can last longer than that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the thing is that it's a soil builder, nitrogen fixer. It moves into places where the soil is doing, where things are going poorly, and the soil is really poor, and it puts in a lot of organic matter. I mean, it gets to be a good 5 to 6 feet tall. But the thing is that it doesn't politely leave. It is easily beaten by trees. It doesn't do well under trees. It's kind of wimpy under trees, and it will eventually give up under a tree. Because it requires a lot of sun, but it'll take big sunny patches, and I think it really does a lot to heal the earth. And then the thing is that, yeah, if you get going down the road and you don't want it anymore, then you're gonna need some big loppers to take it out.
Yeah, didn't he talk about he and a bunch of other volunteers restored the beach habitat in Port Townsend, and I think he said, didn't they say 16 truckloads of scotch broom only that they hauled out of there?
Right, and there's still scotch broom popping up there. And so then, apparently he sold the seed years and years ago when he was a young man, and there was outcry, and so he stopped selling the seed, and now he thinks that he regrets having sold the seed because once it gets established somewhere, the seed that it put out will keep popping up year after year after year. And so it's kind of like, it's not something where you can use it to rebuild the land and then you go a different path and, you can forget about it. It'll keep coming back and it'll outcompete, most things. Anything that grows to less than 3 feet in height cannot outcompete scotch broom. I mean, scotch broom will put down, a big, taproot, as well as it's a nitrogen fixer, and it tolerates the most horrible abuse, but it also thrives on lovely soil too.
Yeah. Anyway,
shall we
move on to the first listener question?
Ho, ho, ho.
Okay, all right.
So this is from Denise, and I'm going to read it because it's quite the comprehensive question. I was really impressed by Paul's digression in this podcast, Sepp Holzer's Permaculture, Chapter 3, Part 2, continued, concerning things we really do to really stop being part of the bad guy system, to really reduce our environmental footprints and all that. How about one or more podcasts just on that topic? The harder topic, but which would really interest me, is related the stuff about how the corporate bad guys pay people to troll for them. How do we really change the world when we are butting heads against them and all their big guns when we try to do that? And all their big guns are targeted at enslaving everybody. Farmers tried to do that in the 1930s, I think it was then, with the Grange system, where they banded together so they could have some control over the prices they were paid for their crops. It worked until the big bad guys shut them down. Labor tried to do that with unions, but those have been emasculated. Sometimes I think that trying to reform the abuser is the same as that guy in mythology who is always trying to roll the boulder up the hill only to have it roll back down.
Well, I'm thinking about it, and I mean, yeah, this is a really tough question, a really hard question. I mean, this is something where it's like I really have to engage all my brains and maybe not be trying to drive at the same time. But one of my thoughts is it's like, you know what? I should probably really tackle this with Jack Spierko, you know, have him on at the same time. Because Jack was telling me something about how there's like a state, like a bunch of people are all trying to move to a state to try and influence the politics. So that way they can have at least one state that's going to be like, you know, their kind of state or something.
Well, I can imagine Jack being all over it. But I think... That's part of what you try to do is sidestep the politics. It's a tricky area because, you know, on one hand, you're putting out your bricks, wanting to make the world a better place, pointing to solutions, and I that's one part, one aspect of permaculture I really try to adhere to as well is what are the positive solutions? Let's focus on solutions, not, you know, saying you're bad, that's bad.
Well, I think both Jack and Forrest Schomer in the last podcast, you know, they both make a very good point, and that point is that you have this amazing political system, and it only works if you're involved. And I kind of feel like I choose to not be involved in that so much anymore, because I feel like I've done my time and I'm tired, and I feel like I've got far more things I need to do that are outside of the system. And yes, I kind of feel like, and I have an enormous army of detractors. I think about half of them are going to be corporate trolls, so people that are paid to be detractors of mine and to be the detractors of many others. And I think about 45% are going to be people that have just bought into those people, bought into the corporate trolls, what the corporate trolls were saying. And then I think that the remaining few are just, you know, people that are my detractors, you know, for whatever reason. And I think anytime anybody does anything of any substance, you're going to have detractors. I read something recently where Gandhi had 1 million detractors.
Well, I don't really care how many of your detractors are corporate trolls or not. I think that's all. I think that's maybe an interesting observation or a thing to try to estimate. But to me, it doesn't matter. I think we're such. It's very difficult to swim against the current and go against the mainstream. And I think we are such social people, as social animals, as humans, that we want to go with the crowd and we want support and we crave that human tribe, that it's very difficult to go against what seems mainstream. I think, you know, we did a review of the movie Thrive, and we've done some things in the podcast that are a little bit more political than really what gets discussed out on Permies. But I view it as more, you know, talking about the corporate trolls, talking about the corporate bad guys, talking about that kind of stuff is more lifting the veil. And if you're presenting information about, well, yes, our media is still controlled by the people who have the money, our food is controlled, and our food laws are controlled by the people who have the money, our, you know, whether our counties spray the weeds with chemicals or not is controlled by the people who have the money. I mean, if you're lifting that veil, then people can make better, more informed choices about what they do, who they vote for, how they vote with their dollars. And I think that's a subtle difference that I'm in favor of, helping us all understand how biased some of our information is so that we can be more informed and make more conscious choices about what we want to support in our life.
Okay. Yes. And I think that I think it's good to. I mean, it's multifaceted. I do think it's good to step around a lot of that stuff, and move forward anyway. At the same time, I think that a lot of people listening to the podcast are kind of like, you know, hey, I go to this side. I want to go learn some things, and then it's like hard to tell the good stuff from the crazy stuff. How do you, you know, they need a good stuffometer to hold up to it to find out, like, you know, what's the crazy talk. I think having at least a slight understanding of what exactly fallacy is would be a good place to start with that. And at the same time, I think, you know, as far as like the political thing of like, yeah, let's all stand up for good stuff. I mean, granted, when the trolls come pouring down, And I just watch and I just kind of think, wow, look at all those guys. There's so many of them. But of course, each troll has typically, you know, 20 to 50 sock puppets. And then I'll see like this one lone voice standing up against all the trolls, attempting to support me. And I love seeing that one person being strong and standing up. But it's like, and then the observer comes along and says, gee, Willikers, should I do permaculture? It sure seems like there's a lot of people saying it's a load of shit. And there's only that one person there, you know, so, and human beings, the default programming is to go with the crowd until you know better.
Well, and when you're talking about fallacies, there's the straw man fallacy, and you've taught me a lot about how people will just get so emotional and so angry, and that'll convince other people to go along with them. They're so passionate and so crazy about it, they must be right. And it's amazing how much that'll tend to convince people.
It is amazing how a fallacy is powerfully persuasive. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, for example, I could say potentially to you, I'm going to make up a scenario. This is my all-time favorite fallacy. And it's like, and all fallacies effectively are like Jedi mind tricks. It's like, it logically, it does not hold up, but it appeals to your emotions so strongly that you are convinced. And so here's my favorite fallacy. I could say to Jocelyn, I could say, hey, Jocelyn, let's go to the movies. And you'll say, no, I don't want to go. So now I'm going to use my Jedi mind trick. Ready? Oh, come on. Really?
Right.
So the weird thing is I want everybody listening to the podcast to think back, has "aw, come on" ever worked on you? and then now that I'm saying it, you're going to have this sharp ear for it, and you're going to notice people saying "aw, come on," and you're going to watch people be persuaded by the argument "aw, come on."
And then it's like this is
like a Jedi mind trick. It's actually technically called fallacy, but it's like a Jedi mind trick, and it only works on the weak-minded. So whenever anybody says to me, "Aw, come on," I actually get pissed off at them and get angry, and I'll tell them off. I point out it's a Jedi mind trick, which only works on the weak-minded. Therefore, you just told me that you think I'm stupid. You think I'm so fucking stupid that I'm going to change my position with, "Aw, come on." Really? Really? You think I'm that fucking stupid? Look at all of that scotch broom right there.
Yeah, that's golden hillside.
So I really believe that in grade school, I mean, like, in fact, every year from the first grade on, there should be at least like a few hours spent teaching kids each year as they're growing up about fallacy. And then by the time that they graduate from high school, they should be experts in fallacy. So that way when the political ads come on, then it's like you see one politician saying something like, you know, "and I stand up for these issues and I want to do," and then you got the other politician that's like, you know, just pouring out fallacies. Then it's kind of like, okay, this one politician is actually, you know, talking about issues and topics, and the other politician is like, you know, bombarding me with fallacy, and so therefore thinks I'm stupid. I'm going to vote for the politician that doesn't think I'm stupid, you know. So, all right. Trying to get back to the topic. Yes, I think that. I do think that there is like probably 20 hours of stuff to talk about from that one question.
Right, and we only have about 10 more minutes before we arrive at our first destination for the day. But the other point you wanted to make, besides critical thinking and dissecting and avoiding fallacy traps, the other point you mentioned before we started the podcast is just doing what is important to you and what meets with your values despite the detractors. And you likened that to the book The Fountainhead.
Yes, I think that when you read The Fountainhead, I mean, I keep hearing from all these political people that find political messages in any of Ayn Rand's stuff, and I feel like her stuff is about personal integrity,
Right. Well, I think the political stuff slides past you in those stories, and you do focus on the personal integrity. I find her works rather dark and depressing myself.
Oh, okay.
But I understand how you find such joy in her examples of personal integrity. I do get that.
So in The Fountainhead particularly, the idea is that you've got a guy who is a clear-thinking guy, and he has got something that he wants to do. Let's pretend for a moment that our guy wants to do permaculture, but then you have all of your chem ag folks, and he goes to ag school, and he basically learns enough from ag school to find out that, you know, no, they do everything the chem ag way at ag school. So he drops out effectively from ag school, and then goes about doing agriculture his way, his permaculture way, and everybody keeps telling him he's crazy, he's nuts, he's an idiot, and a couple of people recognize him as being a genius, but you know, it's all uphill, but he can't do it any other way. He has
right.
to do it the right way.
Right, so he turns down lucrative offers because they want to subjugate what he thinks is right and true. And so he struggles financially, he struggles relationship-wise, he just struggles to live true to his vision.
And then he has freaky sex with a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
I don't understand the sex, the twisted, messed up sex stuff.
Yeah, it's twisted. But, you know, in the end, he does have some measure of success in the end, though even that gets a bit twisted, too. But
So the key is that his throughout the entire book, he is unchanged. He continues to do that which he thinks is the best, despite all this army of people telling him that it's wrong.
Well, and along with him staying true to something that has more value to him, something that's more real, more substantial, he is unwaveringly honest, and he's unwaveringly loyal, and, you know, and honest and simple. You know, he simple in the sense that he doesn't need fake stuff in his life. He's just looking for real connections and real friendships that aren't based on superficialities.
And as time passes, he does meet some people that are his fans, and they'll do anything for him. And they're also face their problems because of their alliance with him, but then they stick to him no matter what, just because it's worth, I mean, it's like without being around somebody that's good and decent, what's the point of being? And so yes, there are some good relationships, but even though there's very few, there's only like five or six, and then there's like hundreds, if not thousands, including the media. I mean, basically the general population is sure that he's a scoundrel, because there's a couple of media people that have it in for him.
Well, and there's plenty of people who really don't like Ayn Rand for a gazillion reasons. But the point of bringing up this book for this podcast is, you know, there are people who enjoy your podcast because they're out there listening to your podcast while they're actually working on their permaculture food systems, or they're building things on their homestead, or they're saving up for their homestead, and none of their neighbors get it. I met a woman in Montana from Texas, and, you know, she feels like all her neighbors think she's crazy because her yard looks so different from anybody else's on the block because she's doing permaculture systems. And people are trying really, really hard to do the right thing despite nobody else getting it or seeing that type of vision or understanding it. So I think that's why we were bringing up this story.
So there will always be detractors, and it is hard to filter out the smart stuff from the wiggy stuff, and I know that I'll read something and I'll think that they make a good point, and at the same time I feel like my gut says there's something stinky there, and when I reread it carefully, then I start to see all the fallacies. And so it's something where, you know, if somebody stands up and they say, you know what, I tried this one thing on my land and I'm having really good success with it. And then somebody comes in and they say, you know, there's all this scientific research that says that you're wrong. I think, you know, in fact, the number one fallacy I see these days for the last year, the number one fallacy is science says that's wrong. And it's like when you start looking into it, it's like science didn't say that. And there's all of these people that are using science as a club. And it's like they have no license to use science. And it's like, I work in a laboratory, therefore I am Mr. Science and I know science. And it's like, you know what? I work with groups of very well-paid professional engineers, and half of them didn't know what the fuck they were doing. And so saying that you work in a laboratory does not impress me with your scientific knowledge. So, we're getting really close. I need to start paying attention to how to get there.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of that comic that the Oatmeal did about Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, we have all this reverence for Edison, and he was explaining how Edison arrived at a lot of his knowledge by accidents and by killing people with radiation. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of science that, yeah, is not what we would think it would be. So yes, we're almost at our next destination. We might want to circle back to this topic and
it's a huge topic.
It is. And so it's no wonder that Denise said maybe it would be one or more podcasts, because it's big and there's lots more we can talk about.
Thank you. All right. So if you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about fallacy. I don't know. Do we talk about fallacy?
Critical thinking.
Yes, that's an important ingredient. Homesteading and permaculture all the time.